Hi, this is Monica. Welcome to the podcast. It's really nice to know that I'm not speaking to the void. But even if I were, I mean, I've been doing it since forever, so not really an issue, is it? Maybe it is. But today's topic is not any mental issue I might have. It's Stephen King. Yay! So, you know, I'm a very big fan of Stephen King. Have been since I was 11 years old. And people always say to me, like, I want to start reading Stephen King, but I have no idea where to start. What should I read first? Or even like, I want to read Stephen King, but I don't really like horror. Is there any book that I can read? And usually I know what the person likes to read, so I know what book to recommend. But what I've noticed in the past years is that people in general don't have a clear idea of what King's work consists of. And that can either create like this big expectation in a King virgin's mind, or it can push potential constant readers away. The idea of this episode then is to, like, who gave me the authority, right? But to try and clarify what King really writes about and tell you what I think his best books to start with are. I want to make it clear though that I haven't read all of Stephen King's books. Like I said, I've been reading and loving King since I was 11. That was 21 years ago. And as much as I'm fascinated by his writing, or maybe because of that, I can't bring myself to read all of his books at once. I read them slowly sometimes, I reread them, I study them, analyze everything I can at the moment. When I feel like I'm more mature and will probably get something else out of a specific book, I go back and go through it again. So I play the long game here. I also read King chronologically, and I have obviously read some newer books already, but mostly I go through them chronologically. And I have just got into the 90s. That means I'm a little bit more than halfway through his work. I've read 44 out of the 77 books that he's published, including the Bachman books, novellas, short story collections, and nonfiction works. Hopefully, I'm qualified and able to give you a hand and recommend the right King story for you. The story that will hook you and make you fall in love with his writing as well. Or heck, maybe it will just make you forget your problems for a while and have a lot of fun while reading. And isn't that something we could all enjoy? Okay, so I want to begin with a very important distinction that should be made between novels and film adaptations. I don't know why, I don't know how, but although King's work is constantly being adapted into other media, especially films and TV, and that's been happening since the beginning with Carrie, the adaptations are usually bad, or at least very different from the original work. This is unfortunate because watching a movie is easier than reading a book, right? So most current or potential constant readers' first contact with King is through a retelling written and directed by someone who is not King. And that determines what their first impression of King is. In other words, guys, don't judge King's novels by their respective adaptations. I am guilty of doing just that with other authors, but I'm asking you kindly not to do it with King. And now that we got all of that out of the way, I'm going to tell you that Stephen King doesn't write horror. Monica, what the fuck? Shut up! No, seriously, listen to me. Stephen King writes drama, and he's excellent at that. The horror in his stories is there as a backdrop. It serves as context. It's a brilliant way that he's found to make the story move forward. And because he loves horror so much, he's been consuming it his whole life, he knows how it works. He makes like this scenario, this context come alive in such a believable, sometimes frightening way that we don't realize he's actually telling us a story about a person or a group of people in a specific situation. I'm not the only person, by the way, who says that, and this idea that he actually writes drama packaged as horror came from the Losers Club podcast, which is my favorite podcast. They read Stephen King chronologically, they talk about the entirety of King's Dominion, and I don't remember who said it and in which episode it was, but they turned all of my ideas into words when they said that. So I had to mention it here. Stephen King writes characters so well that even though he makes mistakes, or used to make, remember, I'm only in the early 90s, even though he makes mistakes when describing women and any type of character that is not white, male, cis, and North American, it's really hard not to like his writing because when he gets it right, it's phenomenal. And I know that now he's been trying to kind of correct some of the mistakes he's made in the past regarding characters that represent minorities or marginalized groups. And he's overdoing it a little bit, Elevation being a good case in point. But still, he's trying. You can see that that's, like, honest, that he's not writing any bullshit just to look good, that he's actually interested in evolving and letting his stories reflect that. I think that says a lot about him. But okay, let me stop rambling. Let's talk books. If you're like, hey, I respect everything you've just said, but I'm here for the horror. Give me all the spooks. I want to be so scared I can't sleep at night. I got you. The right novels for you are probably some of the classics, like Salem's Lot, The Shining, maybe even Cujo, definitely Pet Sematary, and It. I'll just give you a brief description of each one. Salem's Lot tells the story of Ben Mears, a writer who has returned to Jerusalem's Lot in the hopes of finding inspiration to write his new book. The town is a very freaky place, there's something weird and spooky about it, and there is an old mansion that is sort of the center of all of that. There is a group of kids, bad things happen to the kids, there are vampires, it's all very nice and dark, so we follow Ben as he gets involved with this mess. I like Salem's Lot quite a bit. It's not a favorite of mine, but it's good. It was King's second published book, and it's the first time vampires show up in his work. It's worth mentioning that they do come back in later books, especially in the Dark Tower series, and that King has a whole lore about vampires in the universe of his stories that I think is really different and interesting. Now, The Shining, contrary to popular belief, is not about how manic and evil Jack Nicholson is. Although I love Kubrick's film, it's one of my favorite horror films of all times, I do agree with King that the adaptation changed the focus of his story and that that was a disservice to the novel. The basic plot of The Shining is quite simple. Jack Torrance, an alcoholic husband and father, needs a job, and he gets this opportunity of working as the groundskeeper in the Overlook Hotel during winter. Due to weather conditions, the hotel normally closes for the season, and Jack, his wife Wendy, and son Danny would be alone and completely isolated for 3 months. Jack accepts the offer, who wouldn't, and decides that this is the perfect moment for him to write his book. And we cut to Danny. Danny is the sweetest boy you'll ever meet, and he has something that in King's universe we call the shine, which is this psychic ability that enables the person to read minds and even communicate with others who have the shine as well through the mind. Now, the Overlook is not a nice hotel. The Overlook is an evil son of a bitch in which a lot of bad things happened. There's a lot of bad juju there, so when the hotel senses Danny, it wants him. No matter what. So it will take advantage of Jack's alcoholism and like abusive nature to try to get to Danny. I was scared shitless when I read this book. You can argue that the plot of the movie is exactly the same, and I agree it sounds the same, but seriously, the difference is in the details. It feels like a different story, and it scared me so much. I loved it. There are some serious issues that are touched upon here, like alcoholism and parental abuse, but the focus is definitely on how guilty and shitty Jack feels, and on how, because of these feelings, he starts, like, slowly letting the vibe of the hotel inside and letting it take over him. Cujo is the story of a mother and a son who get locked inside a car, and because the car is broken, they are stuck in that place with a rabid Saint Bernard watching and waiting to attack them. The ending of the novel is different from the ending of the film. It's much darker. It's not a story that is meant to cheer you up by any means, but I liked it a lot. I especially love the fact that King writes some parts of it from Cujo's perspective. That's really sweet and dark and twisted, but sweet at the same time. Speaking of dark and twisted, Pet Sematary is about a family who moves to Ludlow, Maine, because Dr. Lewis Creed, the father, has just taken on a new job. The town is very calm, everything seems to be perfect and beautiful, but their house is on a very busy road in which trucks go by way too quickly for the likes of Lewis and his wife, because they have two children, a young girl and a baby, that could get hurt pretty badly in the event of an accident. There is also a pet cemetery in the backyard where generations of children have buried their pets. And well, I'm sure you know what happens. I read this book at least 3 times when I was a teen and I loved it. I was always so easily scared by it. It was a blast. However, back then I couldn't feel the dread and the heaviness that this story brings. It is painful. It is a painful tale of grief and suffering, and it's a whole other thing to read it as an adult. It's spooky, yes, but it's super duper heavy, so be warned. Finally, it tells the story of a group of children who have to fight this ancient evil creature that feeds on fear and has the city of Derry, Maine, in its grip. Just like the film adaptations, the novel has these divisions between then and now, so you know that when the kids become adults, they have to go back and fight it again. When I was younger, I used to say that my favorite King novel besides The Dark Tower was The Stand. For a couple of years now, my answer has changed to It, because there is something in this story, something about these kids, like something about their friendship, about becoming an adult having lived as a child in Derry, that touches me so very deeply. It is absolutely beautiful, it's very scary, but it's also very, very beautiful. It's no wonder that I have a tattoo that says, "Be brave, be true, stand." This is a quote from It, and it is my favorite quote from King. I will say, though, that there is a part of this book that you can skip, close your eyes, don't even look at it, pretend it never happened. It's a huge no-no, everybody hates it, and it's so outside of the curve that is thankfully easy to ignore it and pretend it was just a brain fart. The short story collections Night Shift and Skeleton Crew are a good pick for quick horror stories as well. If you don't want to commit to a chunky novel, they are a good place to start. Alright, we've done horror, now let's talk about huge apocalyptic tomes. The Stand might be a bit too much right now. After all, we are still living through a global pandemic that has turned the world upside down. But yeah, it is about the United States after the apocalyptic consequences of a pandemic. In their case, it was a virus called Captain Trips, which is like COVID, but much, much worse. So the world basically ends, but there is a bunch of people that survive because they are immune to the virus. Some of these people start dreaming about Mother Abigail, this black old woman who is like kindness and love personified, and others start dreaming about Flag, this dude that is essentially the opposite. The idea is that the country is divided into these two groups, Mother Abigail in Boulder and Flag in Las Vegas, and it is a tale of good versus evil, like God versus the devil, heaven versus hell, that sort of thing. I love The Stand. Like I said before, it was my favorite King for many years. There are some things I don't like about it, but I love the whole general concept of it. Getting to know each individual character, like following them on their journey, that's all very magical for me. But unless you are like really into huge books about how crappy people can be, I wouldn't recommend it as a first King, because I believe it has the potential of pushing people away. The Dark Tower is my favorite thing King has ever written, but if you want to read it and you're not a super fan of King yet, I recommend you start by the second book, which is Drawing of the Three. The first one, The Gunslinger, is very different from the rest of the series and very different from any other King novel. So people usually think it's crap and end up giving up. I'm telling you though, start with Drawing of the Three, and when you finish book 7, you can go back and read book 1. You will not miss anything and you will probably like it more. In this series of books, we follow Roland, the last gunslinger, in his journey to the Dark Tower. The tower stands in the center of existence and holds all universes together. It has been in danger of falling for a long time, though, and Roland wants and needs to prevent that from happening. He also needs to climb to the top of the tower and see who sits there and controls everything. That's his obsession. He is joined by 3 companions, Eddie, Susanna, and Jake, each of them bound to him in a different way. More than anything within the story, I love how King acts as if the series itself is the tower that holds all of the universes of his books together. When you start reading a lot of King, you realize that some characters from one novel show up in another one, there are some who show up in the Dark Tower series itself, some places are repeated, some events connect one book to the other. So it's this web of connections that are almost never explicit, but are delightful to find. Now, I've talked a lot about drama, and if that's what you want, if you want a really good story with characters that feel real and that you care about, take a seat and write it down. I recommend Different Seasons, which is actually a collection of novellas, Gerald's Game, Bag of Bones, and Lise's Story. There are many others that I know are good and could recommend here, like 11-22-63, but I haven't read them yet, so I feel like I don't have like enough knowledge of the novel to talk about it properly. That's why I'm sticking to what I know for sure. In Different Seasons, you will find 4 novellas, 2 of which have been adapted into 2 of the best movies based on King's works. Shawshank Redemption, the name of the story is actually Hita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption, and Stand By Me, the name of the story is The Body. The other 2 stories in this collection are not that good. They are Apt Pupil, I don't really like that one, and The Breathing Method, which is okay. But really, The Body and Shawshank Redemption are so good that it's worth getting the whole collection just because of them. If not, I'm pretty sure you can get the novellas separately on Amazon or something. I feel like everybody knows what they are about, but anyway, Shawshank Redemption is about a convict named Andy Dufresne, who was wrongfully imprisoned and seeks for revenge. The whole story is told by Red, a man who Andy met in prison and became friends with. And The Body is about a group of friends, of young boys, who go on this quest to find a dead body that they've heard is somewhere along the railway tracks. Both novellas are really touching and beautiful, and honestly, there's absolutely no horror in them at all. Gerald's Game is a book that I read when I was a young teen, and it's the only King I maybe regret reading when I was that young. It gave me nightmares for years. I still have some pretty bad dreams about it sometimes. I don't know, like, the premise itself is not really suitable for young people, so it fucked my mind up a little bit. Anyway, the story is about a woman, Jessie, who is handcuffed to a bed, and her husband dies of a heart attack. The problem is that they are in their lake house and it's not summer or anything, so all of the neighboring houses are empty. The husband, Gerald, planned this romantic getaway that is not at all romantic for Jesse. He wants to use the handcuffs to do something different to spice up their relationship, but she's not really into it, and he dies in the middle of their argument. The problem, of course, is that she is now in an incredibly vulnerable position with no hope of rescue. But this is the scenario, right? This is the situation. It's where things are happening, and it's terrible enough as it is. But being on her own the way Jesse is, she only has her mind there to keep her company, and she starts listening to the voices that are inside her head, remembering things that happened to her when she was a child, etc. So, you know, it's heavy stuff. So of all of the stories that I'm recommending in this little drama segment, this is the darkest one. It's not a beautiful story or anything. It's 100% pure psychological horror. It's one of my favorite Kings, but it's one of the darkest as well. So I'd recommend it to more experienced readers, like experienced in the genre, right? Because I don't think casual readers of Stephen King would like this book very much. Bag of Bones was actually my first King. I read it when I was 11 years old and reread it twice since then, I think. Not a lot of people like this book, but I adore it. I think it's a beautiful ghost story. I remember it scared me a bit the first time, but when I read it again as an adult, I realized it wasn't really a scary story. It has some scary moments, but that's it. But anyway, Bag of Bones is about an author, Mike Noonan, who is going through severe writer's block, like 4 years after the death of his wife. He's also having this terrible nightmares with their lake house, Sarah Laughs. So he decides to get back there to confront his fears and get inspired. Lots of writers and lots of lake houses in King's stories, I know. But back at the lake, Mike meets Kyra, a 3-year-old girl, and her mother, Maddie. And he also finds that the girl's grandfather, Max DeVore, a millionaire, is trying to get custody of Kyra, so he decides to help them out. As he's doing that, the ghosts in Sarah Laughs get more active, and these are the spooky, scary moments I mentioned earlier. It's a beautiful story. It's such a beautiful story. I know I'm using the adjective beautiful a lot, but that's what it is. Finally, in Lizzie's story, Lizzie lost her husband Scott 2 years ago after a 25-year marriage of the most profound and sometimes frightening intimacy. Scott was an award-winning best-selling novelist and a very complicated man. Early in their relationship, before they married, Lizzie had to learn from him about books and blood and bulls. She understood that there was a place Scott went, a place that both terrified and healed him, that could eat him alive or give him the ideas he needed in order to live. Now it's Lizzie's turn to face Scott's demons, Lizzie's turn to go to Buyemun. What begins as a widow's efforts to sort through the papers of her celebrated husband becomes a nearly fatal journey into the darkness he inhabited. Perhaps King's most personal and powerful novel, Lizzie's story is about the wellsprings of creativity, the temptations of madness, and the secret language of love. I confess, I read this book in my first or second year at university, and I had many other things in my mind, so the details of Lizzie's story didn't stick with me. I just remember the general idea of it, but I remember it was a lovely, lovely story, and I'm still watching the Apple Plus adaptation, so I'm, you know, slowly remembering things. I do know, however, that it's a great book to read if you don't really like horror, but want to read King anyway. King is still writing, he doesn't stop writing, he will never stop writing. And like I said at the beginning of the episode, I haven't read many of his recent books yet, except for The Outsider and Elevation. But I know that he is in a crime mood. He's writing a lot about crimes, about detectives and things like that. And like, based on The Outsider alone and from everything I've been hearing, I don't really think he's at his best with crime, but I mean, God bless him. He's having fun, let him write, you know? I don't know anything about Billy Summers. Billy Summers has just come out and I still don't know what it's about. And as I'm sure you can tell, I'm not really in a hurry either, but I've been seeing people's reactions to it and apparently it's really good. So, there you go. Wow, what a ride. I feel like I've been talking for years, but hey, I could talk about King for centuries and it wouldn't be enough. Thank you so much for listening, for staying with me until now. I hope this episode has helped you choose your first King book that you want to read, or your second, or your third. And, you know, there is no right order to read King's books, not really. I know it can be really intimidating because it's a lot, and there's the whole thing about the Dark Tower connections, but honestly, you can read them in whatever order you choose. Do you mix and match, or I don't know, if you're insane like I am, hop on the chronological train and have fun. If you need any help, if you need any further assistance, I'm here for you. I know I'm not the most knowledgeable constant reader out there. There are many people who know more than I do, but I do know a lot about King and his work, so happy to have your back. If you go to my website, www.monicasanoli.com.br, and search for Stephen King, you will find a blog post titled Chronological King, with a link to a master list that I created and maintain with links to all of the books from Carrie to Billy Summers. You can find links to the Brazilian and American editions of the books, and you can use this master list to track your King journey. That's it! Oh my god, that's it. Thank you for listening. Till next time, bye.